You're listening to the Growing Leaders Podcast, episode number 7. Welcome to another episode of the Growing Leaders Podcast. I'm Jake Sumner, and I'm joined here today by Tim Elmore. And we've got a great episode. We're really excited about the content of this episode. We had an opportunity to spend a little bit of time doing an interview with Dan Pink. He's the author of Drive and Whole New Mind. He's recently had another book come out called To Sell as Human. And Dan Pink is just one of those thought leaders that that we've been influenced by. We know that he's put forth some ideas that I think are really helpful as we lead this next generation of students to really understand how their brains work, to really understand the motivations that are there. And so today we've got just an interview that we would like to share that Tim was able to do with him. And we really want to unpack a little bit of some of the insights that he shares with us from a couple of his books.
Yeah, Jake, I tell you what, Dan Pink has become one of my favorite authors in the world. I first read the book A Whole New Mind, which in essence, just to let you know what you ought to be listening for, it really is some of the brain research, but the cookies are put on the bottom shelf by him. We can understand what he means. Left hemisphere, right hemisphere, what they're both about and why we need to teach for the right brain with this next generation of kids. But then the book Drive is a book on the surprising things that motivate people.
Yeah.
And especially young people. It's not just about, you know, bells and whistles and gizmos that entertain them. It's about, you know, autonomy and mastery and purpose. And he talks about how to tap into that as we teach students. So I think our listeners are going to love this. And I just want you to know to be listening for understanding the brain and understanding how to motivate kids as you teach them.
Definitely. Well, let's take a listen as Dan Pink shares some of his insights with us.
Awesome.
I'd like to start first by talking briefly about your book, the first book I read from you, A Whole New Mind.
Okay.
In that book, you talk a little bit about, you talk about the right brain, the left brain, and how our world is increasingly moving toward the right brain. But I want you to first, do you mind just first summarizing, talk about the left brain, right brain, and for those that don't understand it, just explain that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad that you started that way because there's been a lot of really stupid stuff written about left brain this and right brain that over the years. And the truth is that, you know, our brains are really complex. We use both sides of our brain for everything that we do. But our brains are also pretty elegant and efficient. So over time, they've done this great job of dividing up tasks. And the way that they've divided up tasks, I think, is a very powerful metaphor. Okay, it's not sort of we only need to activate our right hemisphere and never our left hemisphere. But it's a very important metaphor for understanding what it's going to take to succeed today and in the future. And so the gist of it is this. Our left hemisphere specializes in one set of tasks. Okay, this side specializes in tasks that are logical, linear, sequential, analytical, step-by-step. Okay, this side specializes in a different set of tasks, not better or worse or harder or easier. It's just a different department.
Yeah.
So it specializes in tasks that are about processing things all at once rather than step by step, understanding the context of a situation, and doing synthesis rather than analysis. So to sum up, logical, linear, sequential, big picture, context, and synthesis here. And I think that if we use that as a metaphor, what essentially it means is that the metaphorical left brain abilities, the logical, linear, SAT spreadsheet abilities are still necessary. You've got to have them, but they're not enough. And it's now the metaphorically right brain abilities, artistry, empathy, inventiveness, big picture thinking. Those are now the abilities that matter most.
Good. Now let's speak about that. Remember, we're talking to people that care about kids. They're working with kids in schools. I would think schools, just given a typical school, really left brain. I mean, even the subjects that we only know how to teach them in left brain style. Talk about how our world is moving maybe more and more toward right brain and how we really need to rethink perhaps the way we deliver content.
Sure. I mean, this is a very, simple but hard-headed argument. The idea is that a lot of the left-brain abilities are relatively easy to outsource and automate, and therefore they're not as valuable. And the right-brain abilities are harder to outsource and harder to automate, and that makes them more valuable. And so, you can take, say, tax preparation and send it overseas to an accountant in Manila who's making $450 a month. Or you can have it done by TurboTax, a $29, $39, $49 download. And so those kinds of abilities you can outsource and automate. Also, even in spite of the recession and all the bad things that have happened, the level of material abundance in this country is still breathtaking. And so there's a premium on kind of the artistic skill of giving the world something it didn't know it was missing. And so that's why these abilities are the ones that matter most. So what we have here, in the words of sort of paraphrase a superintendent in my neck of the woods. I live in the District of Columbia, but he's in Fairfax County. He says, we need to prepare kids for their future, not my past. And it's the, my past was all about preparation for these metaphorically left-brain abilities, and their future is you got to have those left-brain abilities, but the game changers, the first among equals, are going to be these right-brain abilities, and we're just not – I mean, as you say, Tim, we're not doing a nearly good enough job on that.
Yeah. One of the ways, Dan, that I often summarize the problem between the way students think and the way schools teach is students are right brain upload in their style and schools are download left brain. You know, it's just there, we got these lectures.
Oh, that's a good way to put it. Yeah.
We just got to download this content. And the students are saying, I want to interact and I want to have a picture. And, I want something that's a little more metaphoric. So real quick, Dan, I know I'm kind of hitting you cold with this, but as you interact with educators or that superintendent you just spoke about, what are some ideas or suggestions you make that would help teachers or youth workers begin to transition the way they deliver their lesson plan, their content?
Well, part of it is, it's a number of different things. And there isn't, everyone, I'm not an educator. But, what I see when people talk about education policy is everybody wants the answer. They want the solution, and it doesn't exist. If it were that easy, it would have been done. So there are a lot of different things. I think part of it is, to your point, is challenging certain kinds of, is challenging certain orthodoxies. For instance, what your comments just made me think of is some teachers now who say, wait a second, let's think about homework here for a second. What I do is I lecture in class and I give kids homework. And what happens is that some of the kids, it's too easy. Some of the kids, it's too hard. And I really can't help them with it. What if I challenged the orthodoxy and flipped it and we did homework in class and I just gave them the lectures on YouTube to watch anytime they wanted?
Love it. Yeah.
At home. So that the lectures were the homework and the homework was the stuff they did in class where the teacher can go around and work with people.
Yeah. I love it.
I think it's challenging those kinds. That's beautiful. It's not my idea. It's an idea I heard from Carl Fish. It's an idea that is out there in the education world. I think it's brilliant. It's things like breaking down the boundaries between disciplines. We still frog march kids from math to chemistry to social studies to English, never draw the connections among all of them. And the world, as you know, when you face a problem, the problem is, multidisciplinary. It doesn't come at you as an English problem or a math problem. It's just a problem.
Yeah.
I think that we need to break down the wall between the classroom and the rest of the world, as you were suggesting. We give kids these kind of hermetically sealed fake problems, where they're clearly defined and there's one right answer, which is not an interesting problem and not a problem that they'll ever face after they're 22 years old.
That's right.
And so I think giving kids real problems in the community, in their school to solve, even if they're murky, a little bit ambiguous, is really helpful. I think that we need to make arts education. We think of arts education as ornamental to a kid's education. I think it has to be fundamental. I think that the ability to think like an artist, to iterate things, new things, to express yourself is now fundamental in being a fully educated person and thriving in the economy. I think there are all kinds of governance issues because if you think about schools, teachers probably have less autonomy than any white-collar worker I can think of. And I think the more that teachers have autonomy, I think the better. I think most of the teachers in this country are pretty damn good. And if you give them some freedom to do great things, they'll knock your socks off.
I think it's a
mix of things that involves really challenging certain kinds of orthodoxies, adopting some new practices, and, you know, endless experimentation to see what works. But what disturbs me a little bit is a search for a panacea. You know, we're going to solve it with standardized testing. We're going to solve it with merit pay. I mean, we can talk about those two issues in particular, but to me, it's like it's not one thing. It's multiple things.
Yeah, good. That makes a lot of sense. One last question on a whole new mind. If we don't change the way we teach, and I think you're right, teachers are great, but they're less, they have less autonomy than most white collar workers. If we don't change the way we do things, what will we see in 10 or 20 years? Will it be students that have had just, I don't know. What do you think? What are your thoughts?
Well, I don't know. You know, I mean, you know, I'm not sure because, you know, you remember back in 1983 when there was that big report, you know, the rising tide of mediocrity report.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. You know, the kids in school then were the same kids who created the internet boom.
Yeah, right.
You know, so, you know, I think in some ways people are really, I think kids are really smart and ingenious and can do a, it's like a bad technology.
Yeah.
If you have a bad technology, a bad piece of software, you figure out the workarounds. And you get it done.
Right.
And,
right.
So I think that, you know, it's not as cataclysmic as we might
sure.
think.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of kids are going to do workarounds around a bad system. Now, that's still a huge waste. It's still a huge waste because your kids are expending energy on the workarounds rather than on learning.
Yeah.
What does worry me is the divide in basically socioeconomic status where there's a big chunk of kids in this country who were simply marooning in desperate situation. And that is a very difficult problem to solve. And that's a problem that's going to be, to solve it, it's going to be inconvenient for other people.
Yeah.
And one of the things that in our political leadership is that our political leadership never likes to inconvenience anybody.
Yeah.
And because they're worried about asking citizens for anything.
Yeah.
And I think that's an abject lack of courage. And it's the only way we're going to address some of these issues.
Yeah. Great point. Great words. Thanks for the suggestions. Let me shift gears now real quick to Drive, which is one of the best reads I've had in a long time. By the way, I told you this. I'm recommending that book everywhere I go. It's just, I think it's a masterpiece.
Love you, Tim.
Well,
thanks a lot.
You betcha. But it's just great. You were able to put into words what I think so many leaders need to hear. By the way, we're about developing next generation leaders, and I just feel like you nailed it. Let's set it up for the listeners that may not have read Drive yet. In the book, you talk about motivation 1.0, 2.0, 3.0. Explain that real briefly for our listeners.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, motivation 1.0 is a motivational operating system, so to speak.
Yeah.
Built on a biological drive. It was the system that reigned when we were evolving on the savannah. We were trying to survive.
Yeah.
So it was about biological urges. Then we upgraded to motivation 2.0. You can't run an economy of any sophistication. You can't have encounters with people who aren't in your family simply based on biological drives. It ain't going to work. And so we ended up with a new operating system, which is built very much on rewards and punishments. And human beings have that drive. We do respond very well in general to rewards and punishments. You reward something, you typically get more of it. You punish something, you typically get less of it. The problem is that kind of operating system doesn't work for the sort of work that we were talking about before, for the sort of high-level conceptual creative work, the right brain work. And for that, we need a different operating system, which is built on another drive that every human being has, but one that's, I think, routinely neglected inside of companies, which is our third drive, which is that we do things because they're interesting, because they're challenging, because we like doing them, because they're part of who they are, because they contribute to the world. And that's a very powerful drive. And to me, that is the essence of that drive. Tapping that drive is the essence of high performance on these creative conceptual abilities.
Absolutely. And on that drive, I want to focus now. Motivation 3.0, according to you, is about mastery, autonomy, and purpose. If you don't mind, I know you've probably done this 1,000 times, but just real quick, define what each of those means. And I think everybody's going to get it real quick.
Yeah. I mean, you know, to take a step back, you know, we tend to think that what allows people to perform at a higher level is rewarding the behavior you want and punishing the behavior you don't want. And that does sometimes work. The thing is, if you go back and look at 50 years of science, it's pretty darn clear that those kinds of motivators, those, I call them if-then motivators, yeah. if you do this, then you get that, they're really good for simple tasks. They're not very good for tasks that require even a modest level of cognitive, conceptual, creative ability. For those sorts of things, again, as we were discussing earlier, the sorts of things that that most people in the workforce today are doing, certainly most people in the workforce in the future are doing, those kinds of carrot and stick if-then motivators, the science shows very clearly, don't work very well for those tasks. Yeah. What does work, as you say, are those three things: autonomy, mastery, and purpose. Autonomy is our desire to direct our own lives. So people are able to do some of this high-level work when they have some kind of sovereignty, some kind of control over when they work, how they work, who they work with, what they actually do. Mastery, that's autonomy. Mastery is our desire to get better at stuff. We like to get better at stuff because we like to get better at stuff. It's that itself is inherently satisfying.
Yeah, yeah.
That is a powerful human drive. Again, often neglected inside of companies. And that's a drive that explains in part open source. It explains a lot of really interesting things. And then finally, is purpose, that human beings perform at a higher level if what they're doing is somehow connected to a cause larger than themselves. And, you know, if you really want enduring motivation for these higher level conceptual creative tasks, you want people who are autonomous, who are moving toward mastery, and who are connected to something larger than themselves. Mm. That works a heck of a lot better, particularly in the long run, than this endless arsenal of carrots and sticks.
Yeah, yeah. It seems to me like as we work with Generation Y, and now these younger kids we call Generation IY because of the impact of the I world, it seems like they inherently get this. They want autonomy, maybe way too early, but they want it. And they want to master something, and they, you know, whether it's a video game, level 3 on Grand Theft Auto or whatever.
Exactly.
But then they also, I am amazed at how adolescents want purpose. They don't want just make, you know, transactional stuff. How can a teacher, a coach, a youth pastor, how can they apply this to their lives? And again, I know I'm hitting you cold, but what comes across your mind when you think about leading Motivation 3.0 style with the next generation?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think it's a really important question. And I think that in some ways, those folks understand this in their bones, that this is what really motivates people. Yeah. I remember I was at some event and talking about this book Drive, and a high school teacher said to me, "Oh man, these kids are so not motivated. They don't care about anything." And I said, "Well, okay. That's the experience in your class, but have you seen these kids when they're on the athletic field? Have you seen them in the school play, in the orchestra, in their church youth group? Mm-hmm. Well, how are they there? Oh, well,
yeah.
And I said, well, what is it about this? Is that they have some amount of control over what they're doing.
Yeah.
They're getting better at stuff. They're doing it in a collaborative way. They're doing it for a sense of purpose. So I think that at some level, the folks whom you're talking about kind of get this already.
Yeah.
I think what they can do is recognize that if you really want people to be engaged, you can't control them.
Yeah.
That you can't kind of control or coerce somebody into engagement. They have to get there under their own steam. It has to be self-directed. And so I think that, you know, offering even adolescents some amount of freedom over what they do, how they do it is really important. Mm-hmm. The other thing is that I think we somehow underestimated, well, first of all, you made the point about mastery. People like to get better at stuff. That's why video games are so popular.
Yeah.
Is that it gives people these flow experiences where the challenge is matched to the task.
Yeah.
Or just a little bit outside of their ability. So they work a little bit. They get this flow experience where time is melting away. They get better. They go at their own self-directed pace. They get a lot of feedback. And that I think is a really, I think Grand Theft Auto, the game, is a piece of crap. But I think that the grammar of video games, the structure of video games is powerful.
Yeah.
Because that's how we learn. We try something that's a little bit harder than we can do.
Yeah.
We figure it out. We move up a level. We get regular feedback. And I think that in the workplace, especially, I think in school as well, I think that the workplace and to some extent schools, to a lesser extent, but still large extent, schools are completely feedback impoverished.
Yeah.
And these kids, as you're suggesting, are feedback freaks.
Yeah.
I mean, they're
yeah.
used to getting feedback all the time. And some of it's a little bit needy, but not all of it is. I mean, they're used to things happening. Yeah. You press this button, something's going to happen.
Yeah.
They're not used to saying, oh, let me just work for 6 months or a year and have no idea how I'm doing and whether I'm doing a good job and then just wait for this formulaic performance review at the end of 12 months.
Yeah.
It's not something they're going to want to do.
Absolutely.
Understandably. And I think that you're right. I think your observation that these kids are very purpose driven is accurate and very heartening.
Yeah. One last question. The book I already mentioned is fantastic.
Thanks.
If you were to do a monograph just for adults who work with kids, what would you add? Would it be anything? I mean, I think it's all applicable.
You know what I would do? That's a good question. It's an interesting question. I think what I would do is I would go out and talk to, I would go out and try to find, like, who are the 10 most effective youth pastors? Who are the 10 most effective coaches? Who are the 10 most effective high school teachers?
Yeah.
And interview them and say, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. And my hunch is that a lot of it, not all of it, I think a lot of it would come back to giving kids a sense of autonomy.
Yep.
Helping kids see the purpose in what they're doing.
Yeah.
I also think holding them to high standards too. I think that I think you'll end up seeing that. These sorts of things are not, it's not saying we want autonomy instead of accountability.
Yeah.
We want autonomy because it leads to accountability.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's a great idea. It's a great question. Great idea. I would go out and find, those 30 superstars or, mm-hmm. I mean, there are more than that obviously in this country, but, go out and find the 45, 15 of each category, 45 superstars, and see what they're doing.
Well, those are great.
I think they have. I think that that's why they're succeeding.
Yeah, I'm sure you're right, and you're right. It may not be everything about that, but a lot.
They're not treating kids like as if they're coin operated. If you just sort of put in some money, they'll respond.
Right.
They're not treating kids like little miniature robots or less enlightened animals who respond only to external stimuli. They're treating people like human beings. They're treating people like full-fledged human beings with their own set of abilities, their own sets of needs, their own set of aspirations, honoring that individual and helping that individual become the best version of him or herself that person can be.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, for you guys listening in, the book is called Drive, and I highly recommend it. It's just going to speak to you, whoever you are. Dan, thanks for taking a few minutes and just meeting with me. This has been a pleasure.
My pleasure.
I tell you what, I'm always impressed when I hear Dan Pink talk. I mean, not only is he a scholar and he's bringing across these great, lofty ideas, but he's also a dad. And so you get this feeling of he's going to make it practical. He's going to make it applicable. And it's not just in the realm of theory and, kind of this area beyond where we can reach, but it's also, we're going to take these insights that we've learned from this incredible research and actually get some work done with it.
Yeah.
And I love that combination of those two things. So as we've listened to this interview, I mean, there's obviously a lot of ideas that are floating around right now. But what do you think? What do we do with this? What's our response as we lead the next generation and try to put these ideas into practice in our own areas?
Yeah, Jake, I would suggest that our listeners maybe ask themselves a handful of questions.
Mm-hmm.
This is the beginning of application. The first one is, as you lead and as you teach students, the next generation, are you typically more left brain than right brain in your delivery?
Mm-hmm.
And if you are more left brain, more didactic, more about dates and numbers and stats and figures, how could you be more right brain?
Yeah.
How could you engage the imagination with music and images and imagination, with habitudes? That has been our push, is to help leaders be more right brain in their delivery. So that's question number one. Question number two, what are the gimmicks we employ to motivate kids?
Mm.
Are they just that, gimmicks? Are they techniques? We give them a little prize. Is it the Pavlov dog where you rings the bell and we give them a little piece of food? Or do we tap into the autonomy they seek, the mastery of some issue, and then the purpose? I think students really want to be a part of something bigger than themselves.
Yeah.
In fact, Jake, you've heard me say this before. I think students want to be a part of something that's very important and almost impossible.
Yeah.
So as you lead and as you teach, are you calling that out of them, the autonomy, the mastery, and the purpose? And then question number three, What is it that's behind your leadership of students? Is it just carrots and sticks? You know, you get a carrot and, you know, you get your paycheck and you get 3 months off in the summer if you're a teacher or whatever. I think we need to make sure we tap into these ourselves. Mm-hmm. What motivates me? And am I engaging both the left brain and right brain as I lead? Those are the key questions I would say in application.
Definitely. Well, those are some great thoughts for us to take away. I hope that, you know, as you've listened to this today, that those are some helpful thoughts for you to take and to wrestle with these questions a little bit. And, you know, to really be able to apply some of the things that we've talked about today. Because, yeah, Dan Pink has done a great job in sort of bringing these ideas across in a way that we can put some handles on them and take them and run with them. This just reminds me, I think, you know, if we want to dig a little bit deeper in this, a great opportunity to do that is our National Leadership Forum that's coming up this summer. And do you want to take just a moment just to unpack the theme of that a little bit? Because that is definitely just a time that we can come together with other people that are wrestling with these same issues and try to walk away with some practical ideas of what to do with that.
Yeah, late June every year, we have a National Leadership Forum here in Atlanta, Georgia. In 2013, it's going to be June 27, 28, and it's going to be two outstanding days. I can hardly wait for them because our theme is marching off the map. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about the future of education. Where is it going and where are we going? And are we going to be trailing behind 5 years on what we need to be doing to really engage students? So, Jake, we're bringing in the best researchers, futurists, creative educators, creative faculty members. Kim Bearden will be there from the Ron Clark Academy. Elena Bedrova will be there, researcher from Denver, where she's going to share research that it's going to blow our minds, and she's going to apply it to what do we do in the classroom now, or the nonprofit or the church, wherever we are.
Exactly.
Len Sweet will be there, the futurist, who will talk about the future of where we're going. It's just going to be mind-boggling when Len speaks. So I want to encourage anybody that's listening, if you care about the future and you care about staying on the cutting edge of reaching young people, these 2 days will be outstanding. And so, Jake, why don't you tell them maybe where they can go to find out
how to
register.
If you want to get some more information on that, it's all there on our website at nationalleadershipforum.org. And yeah, I would just encourage you to go to that website, check it out. You can get all the details and the pricing. But we would really love for you to come and be a part of it. We intentionally keep this forum small. We want to cap it around 300 people total. And so it's not a giant conference where you can get lost in the crowd. It is a place where we want you interacting with the people that you're sitting with. We want you to bring members of your team. Yeah. And we want you guys to leave with a game plan of how you can put these things into action when you get back to your campus or to your organization, wherever it is that you're working with students on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
If you're a leader, it's the beginning of the year. We're still in January here. If you're looking for something to really kickstart your leadership and to accelerate it through the course of this year, we'd invite you to check out Leadership to Go, and it's just at leadershiptogo.com. Through January 31st, we're going to be offering some special pricing. So if you're listening to this and want to take advantage of that, we'd encourage you to log on before the 31st and take advantage of some of the best pricing that we're going to be offering this entire year. And then the final thing is, I know that a lot of people find us through different ways. Perhaps the podcast is the way that you've come across Growing Leaders. If that's the case, we'd love for you to come and check out our website at growingleaders.com. Tim blogs every day at growingleaders.com/blog. So if you'd like to get some more content and dig in a little bit deeper on some of these ideas, you can come there for some practical ideas on leading the next generation well. And then finally, we always post the show notes. Just simply go to growingleaders.com/007. All the show notes are going to be there if you want to dig in a little bit deeper. We'd love to hear your feedback on some topics that you guys would love for us to address in future episodes. So as you go to that growingleaders.com/007, there's a place where you can leave comments for us. You can leave questions. There's even a place where you can leave a little voice message for us if you want. And we'd love, love to hear your feedback. And we just want to continue to provide people that are leading the next generation with tools that can help them do that well. Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Growing Leaders Podcast. We look forward to seeing you back next time.